Coming up on show 1060, the world car of the year for 2021 is an electric car. Yeah, of course it is. Find out which one. Stick around. Also on the podcast today, we are talking about an innovative way to charge trucks. Why the new Ford Mustang Mach-E range gets even bigger as of next week. And we take a look at Tesla, particularly in China, and how things are working out for them over there. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It's Thursday, 22nd of April. My name's Martin Lee. I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. We try and include all the EV news on this podcast, not just one manufacturer. A bit of it light on Tesla news recently. There's been some bad news around a crash with Tesla, which I'm refusing to talk about because it's being treated like a soap opera by lots of people on the internet with no respect for the families involved. So rather than talk about it and, you know, risk coming across in the same way as I'm finding the other coverage, just leaving it to be now while the investigators get on. But we have got a lot of Tesla news to get to on the podcast today. But first of all, the world car of the year is named. It is indeed an electric car, and it is the winner, the Volkswagen ID4. It is Volkswagen's first battery-powered SUV. What was it up against? Well, it was up against the Honda e, a car that isn't even available in many parts of the world. Right, world car of the year, can't get it in the US, brilliant. And the Toyota Yaris, well, the electric ID4 is the second EV from VW after the ID3. And of course, before then, the new kind of platform they're working on called MEB, there was lots of EVs like the e-Golf. But this is the first custom design from the ground up EV, if you like, of the latest generation. Each year, automotive journalists from around the world vote for their picks of the best vehicles in the world cars. And the World Car of the Year Awards, established a little while ago to recognise and reward innovation, and the VW ID4 getting the honours this year. A group of 94 global automotive journalists. So they're all over the world, almost 100 of them. They serve as the jurors on the tests. This is according to futurecar.com. The vehicles are evaluated on a scale of 1 to 10, including occupant environment, performance, value, safety, market significance, etc. And the ID4 is very significant to the electric car market because it's at a very good price point and has a very solid set of specs and will suit an awful lot of people. And it's a world car. So the ID4 is in the US, it's in Europe, and there's two versions in China as well from the two joint ventures that VW have over there. So that does seem to tick the boxes. I've only spent a short time in the ID4. I thought it was good without being knock my socks off crazy. My buddy Kyle from Outer Spec Studios is a big fan of it, says it makes him smile. I didn't get on with the non-physical buttons on the steering wheel. I like a button because then when I'm driving, often they're sort of raised or indents, and you get to know where cruise control is, you get to know where volume up, volume down is, you get to know where phone answering is, and you haven't even got to take your eyes off the road because your thumb feels the way when you drive a car. Now, it's probably the case with the ID4, but there's loads of cars coming out with these kind of capacitive, if that's the right word, buttons that is sort of a smooth surface, and then you rub your finger over a gloss surface to turn the volume up. Rub your thumb one way and turn the volume down and rub it the other way. It didn't work for me. I couldn't get on with it. Otherwise, I thought the ID4 was a brilliant car. Didn't have time to live with it or take it home or play with the app and stuff like that. I wonder how many of these jurors have. I'm only asking the question because it's a relatively new car. 94 automotive journalists voting. I wonder how many of them have lived with the VW ID4. Not meant to be a loaded question, but I'm aware that it probably is sounding like it. Look, I'm delighted an electric car has won. So before we get too far into this, let's just congratulate the VW ID4 and the team as well. And there's so many more cars coming on that platform. Of course, the Audi Q4 e-tron is one of those. Skoda Enyaq iV, reported on earlier this week, is selling good numbers as well. They're increasing the production there, and so that's going really well for them. Mentioned the Honda e, didn't pick up the main award, but the Honda e did pick up the World Urban Car. Yeah, the World Urban Car that you can't buy in the USA. All right, okay. It's a nice honour to have, anyway. Just saying. Moving on, and let's talk about Daimler. And Portland General Electric are unveiling today the first of its kind, a new electric truck charging station in Portland, Oregon. Semi-trucks are now coming on the roads, bigger numbers, bigger batteries, bigger range. And Daimler and PGE have an important step in the right direction, says Fred at electric.com. A full-scale electric truck charging station. And you may wonder, well, how is this different from any other charging station? Well, I guess the charges are laid out in a different way. There's long bays that are designed for semi-trucks with a trailer on the back as well. Funnily enough, I was watching a Björn Newland video of a coach, as in one of those kind of coaches that will cross continents, not a bus, but a proper touring coach, was charging an Ionity in Norway, and it just looked really weird because it was surrounded by small cars. And you know, these custom stations for big commercial vehicles will be needed, and so they're trying them out. They've called it the Electric Island, and there's loads of space around it, like I say, custom designed for big rig trucks to pull in and charge. They will be studying 1 megawatt charging, but it's unclear if the capacity is deployed at that site already, so we'll wait and see. However, it's just good news because we need to, I think, get to a universal truck or universal commercial vehicle standard. Do you agree with me on that? You know, I'm not saying that one size fits all is always better, but I do think in order to speed up the adoption of commercial vehicles, if the world can just agree on one plug socket, well, China won't, because China will go with, they have their plug is called GBT, but they're also pushing forward new CHAdeMO. And so that's fine. It's a connection with CHAdeMO, backward compatible, all good. But the rest of the world, be great if there was some sort of CCS-derived standard, which they all used. It would help speed things up. Next, the Ford Mustang Mach-E GT opens next week for ordering, according to Autoblog, although it's been available for a little while now. End of April, it's been a while since you could get the Mustang Mach-E, and we've got it in here in Europe as well. Word is that price guides and the order site will open for dealers on the afternoon of the 26th of April. So if you want the most powerful GT variant of the Mustang Mach-E, and why not, then you can get that on April 26th. Two versions of the Mustang GT available, regular GT and GT Performance Edition. So that is either 480 horsepower and a ton of torque, 600 pound-feet of torque. And the latter, the GT Performance Edition, sticks with the same amount of horsepower but has more torque. Both have dual motors. What else? Yes, all-wheel drive, 88 kilowatt-hour battery pack, 250 miles of range, and of course they're still eligible for the $7,500 federal tax credit if you do apply, if you do, you know, qualify for it yourself. I'm guessing if you're buying a 60 grand car, you probably do, then Ford cars still get that discount. Let's talk a little bit about Tesla in China. There's been a bunch of news happening over there that I've resisted on reporting on because it's the kind of stuff that many blogs and news sites kind of go, they go loopy over. So at the Chinese auto show, there was a disgruntled driver of a Tesla Model 3, and she had an incident where the car didn't stop in time, evidently blamed the car, not her, not braking enough, and jumped on the roof of one of the cars on the Tesla stand. And, of course, just thousands of people gathered around, everyone filming on their phones, media went wild, wasn't dealt with in the best way, security manhandled her down, police took her into custody, and she was just protesting against Tesla. Now, there will, of course, be two sides to every story. There'll be logs as well, because the Teslas are covered in sensors in terms of how much brake pressure is being applied, at what time, etc., etc. And so all of that will be logged somewhere. That should be investigated. She's obviously frustrated why she's doing this, but Chinese media kind of turned on Tesla this week. And so I wanted to take a look at sentiment. Always very interesting, isn't it, sentiment? Tesla says sorry in China after the disquiet was growing. After a dream run that saw it receive backing from the highest levels of Chinese states, Tesla is getting a reality check in the country, coming under fire for how it treats its customers. The company earlier this week found itself at the pointy end of two missives from government, both of which criticised Tesla's attitude towards consumer service, says the website theedgemarkets.com. The drubbing from the authorities came after Tesla endured an embarrassing outbreak at the show on Monday when one of the owners of the car jumped on top and protested. Lots of unwanted publicity. Tesla did respond. Many people thought the response was arrogant. And again, I've stayed away all the way through this week from reporting the news as it came in. I think if you report it drip, 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 you can misreport stuff, or it's all rumour or conjecture. Anyway, so a few hours later, the Commission for Political and Legal Affairs of the Communist Party in China weighed in, posting a commentary online saying Tesla will respect Chinese customers and Tesla will comply with local laws and regulations and make an effort to find the cause of problems and improve their cars when they need to. Yeah, so that's really different to most of the markets that Tesla operate in, where it's much light touch regulation, where Tesla can move forward at their own speed on their autonomous plans, and regulators probably don't really understand it, if I'm honest, not being insulting to those official bodies, but they've got some good people working on it. I'm sure they've got some people who are not up to speed. And, you know, in a country like China, Tesla really can't take any risks. So a climb down, an apology, and definitely things being put in place to try and appease the Communist Party's discipline commission. And the apology, I think, would probably go down well in terms of the attitude shown. It's fascinating how they have to behave in different parts of the world. They wouldn't do that in the US. I see them have sometimes a combative relationship with those. You can't do that in China. I mean, you can't do it in China. So fascinating to watch. But of course, I'll pop a link to the that story in the show notes, because sometimes you've got to read it all. It's a long read. And sometimes, look, people email me after I've reported on a story and went, oh, that article you quoted there, they're a long-term Tesla bull. They're a long-time Tesla hater. They wrote that only for one reason. So again, I never, ever mind people emailing and suggesting, criticizing choice of stories and the sources of which I use. I'm not deep in that Tesla world. I'm in the EV world. But if you could spend, as people do, 24 hours a day in Tesla world, but then you'd be very short-sighted on everything else that's happening. So I try and keep an eye out on everything, and that sometimes means that I'll report on something and people go, oh, that journalist has been tweeting hate about Tesla for years. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to promote that. Next, always interesting to look at the mainstream media and how they treat EVs. And the New York Times talking about three new electric SUVs with Tesla in their sights. And following what I just said, the writer is Lawrence Ulrich. I don't know that person, but anyway, just in case they're infamous for loving or hating Tesla. An electric trickle is turning into a flood. As many as 100 new EVs are coming to showrooms by 2025 in the US. VW, General Motors, Ford, all lining up to get their share of attention. Until now, Tesla has taken everything in their stride and frankly, swatted away the competition, many would say. So, what are the cars in this article which they say are causing Tesla the most headaches? Well, that would be the VW ID4, Ford's Mustang Mach-E, and Volvo's XC40 Recharge. Do you agree or disagree with that assertion from the New York Times? I always love to hear your thoughts. You can email me anytime on address hello@evnewsdaily.com. Same one to use for question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. I'll give you the question at the end of the show. Staying with Tesla, and if you have solar panels on your roof and have been budgeting or saving up to add a bit of battery storage, well, the battery storage you add won't be a Tesla Powerwall, because Tesla's solar roof is to be sold exclusively with Powerwall batteries. In other words, they won't sell you anything individually anymore. It has to be an integrated product, and it's really interesting. I'd love to know more. I guess Tesla famously don't communicate with anything apart from Elon Musk's short tweets, and it would be nice to have things like press releases that had bigger quotes from the divisional leaders of, say, the solar department or storage department, to further understand thinking and to explain it to you, the listeners and consumers. But of course, no, they don't famously don't do that, and for good and bad as well. It's good that you have a direct line to the CEO, but it's less ideal in terms of communicating things like this. And of course, it came in a recent Twitter announcement by Mr. Musk. Tesla's solar roof and solar panels only being sold integrated with Powerwall. So if you have solar already, it's not for you, unless you need some more solar, I suppose. Having an integrated solar and battery system, Elon Musk saying, has advantages like seamless installation processes. The Powerwall battery would also interface between the utility meter and the home's main breaker panels, providing customers with backup energy in case of a power failure, says the website Teslarati. The solar power feeds exclusively to Powerwall. Powerwall interfaces only between the utility, enabling a simple install and seamless whole house backup. Tesla Powerwall stands as one of the most popular residential battery systems on the market. I think it's the best cost per kilowatt hour in terms of they're quite big batteries, and yeah, they're expensive, but there's something that I've always had at the back of my mind. We don't have £7,000 in this country. We don't have that spare. We haven't got solar yet, but it's on the shopping list, and, you know, I'm working really super hard to save a bit of money. Hard when you got a little baby in the house, but, you know, it's one of those things that we'd like to do one day. But it won't be Tesla anymore. And that's a shame, because I think they're also upping the power output from 7 kilowatts to nearer 10. And I think bursts of peak power of 20 kilowatts coming out of the Powerwall, I believe, with software updates. Not sure I read that somewhere, but fascinating technology. Tesla understand batteries in intricate detail, and I'm a bit disappointed that it's off my shopping list, but I wasn't exactly buying one this year anyway. Next, we will talk about NIO and their comment on Tesla's full self-driving adoption rate in China on the last earnings call, where you get to hear from Elon, not just in a tweet, but talking. You wonder whether some of it is intentional. Well, he's a CEO, so he's not a dumb guy, but some of it you wonder, did you mean to say that, or is it just something that's floating around your brain? And he admitted that full self-driving in China is wildly unpopular, has a 1 to 2% take rate. Nobody in China is optioning that at all, unlike the US. And the Chinese vehicle maker NIO picked up on that as well, saying that the low adoption rate of full self-driving indicated that they shouldn't be selling it, actually, and that they should be offering a subscription model instead. In an interview with Chinese media, saying that a subscription system would be better for Tesla's full self-driving users, who are discouraged at the moment of a one-time high price buyout of the feature. Do you agree or disagree? That's the website bengzinger.com reporting on that NIO interview. Subscription seems like a bit of a no-brainer, because recurring revenue is a bit of a golden goose for many companies. But what's the monthly price going to be? If it's 100? Well, yeah, if I was a Tesla owner, I'd bite your hand off. But it won't be, because it's 10 grand to get it new. So the price point going to be, we'll find out. Right, two more stories to go on the podcast today. Hyundai's IONIQ 5 next to a Model 3 from Tesla is chunky. There's a new video that's been published online from a South Korean YouTuber, and it's all about the IONIQ 5 charging. It shows them at one of the new Hyundai charging stations, which are 350 kilowatts of power on those chargers. But there's also a brief shot of the Hyundai IONIQ 5 next to a Model 3. And goodness me, does the Hyundai look big. It's taken a slight perspective, so there's a very little perspective effect. It's nearer the Hyundai, but still, it is a chonk, this car. And because the pictures of it make it look smaller than it is, they've used big rims, low-profile tyres. You can't tell from a picture, really, from the outside. They've made the proportions look like it could be a smaller city car, or even a mid-size. But IONIQ 5 is most definitely a larger family crossover when you compare it to a car that many people know very well, which is the Model 3. And that's going to be a big car, big wheelbase, and tall as well. Again, hopefully I haven't got perspective of the photo wrong. It's a still that I've taken from the YouTube video. But the Hyundai 5, or IONIQ 5, I should say, is a car that I can't wait to get my hands on personally. Finally, happy anniversary, Zero Motorcycles. And they're having their 15th anniversary celebrations, and so they are releasing a limited edition DSR as part of their 15th anniversary collection. Wow, electric motor Sykes have come on such a long way. And on Earth Day, they announced a new limited edition electric motorcycle designed around their effort to talk about Earth's natural treasures and resources, announcing it on Earth Day as well. So congratulations to the team at anyone that was there 15 years ago and still at Zero Motorcycles. They're you would probably say the Tesla of motorcycles, and I mean that in terms of, if you ask a lot of people name an electric motorcycle company, Zero is probably top of mind in the way that for many people Tesla is top of mind, again, for right or wrong, and they are made in California. They're a Silicon Valley company, I think I'm right in saying. So that is a great bit of news, and that's your podcast for today. Question of the week, if you want to get your answers in, I'll read out yours on Sunday. Be great to hear from you. I'm asking you if you mind where cars are actually made. Do you mind what boys and girls and machines tighten the nuts and bolts? I'm asking, would you buy a Chinese EV? Do you care where cars are made? Or would you rather know exactly what kind of quality it's going to be because you've bought from that brand before, for instance? Let me know. hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, if you want, you can have a look at the Patreon page. You don't have to. Of course, it's free, this podcast, but I'd appreciate you having a look. It's how we fund the show. It's, I don't know, $5 or $10, posh coffee or two a month. patreon.com/evnewsdaily. A quick mention of our premium partners, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com, Derek Riley and his awesome EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, of course, emobilitynorway.com. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as self-charging hybrid.